content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you the Science Fiction Book Club meeting Thursday, January 11th, Novel Ideas meets January 19th, a Friday, ACB Diabetics in Action meeting January 21st, a Sunday, the Mystery Book Club will be meeting January 28th, also a Sunday, FDA approves gene therapy, Lyft app improves access. E. La Carte now includes audio at restaurants. And if I have time, I'll read a little blurb about most recent activity with Jose Feliciano. Today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. From Evan Reese to the ACB email lists. Hello, folks. A pretty good turnout for our most recent meeting with some great book discussion. The major books people brought with them this month were Ashes of Victory, Honor Harrington 9 by David Weber, Earthmen and Strangers, 9 Stories of Science Fiction, edited by Robert Silverberg, Mother of Demons by Eric Flint, The Best of Connie Willis by Connie Willis, The Songs of Distant Earth by Arthur C. Clarke, The Year's Best Science Fiction, 25th Annual Collection, edited by Gardner Dozois, Waypoint Kangaroo by Curtis Chin. The next Science Fiction Club meeting will be Thursday, January 11th, 2018. Place, Book Nook at http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID equals RS7867A2369EOE. Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, and 2 o'clock Universal Time. Commute, join us in January, and we'll start off another year of talking about the literature we love, science fiction. Happy New Year to all. Evan. Randy Shelton sends this update for the Novel Ideas book group. We had a great discussion of A Magical Christmas last month and hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season. We look forward to reading and discussing more great books in 2018. Novel Ideas will be discussing the book Wonder by R.J. Palacio, DB74228. Guest host Carla Hayes will lead us in the discussion of this great book. Below is the synopsis from Bookshare. I won't describe what I look like. Whatever you're thinking, it's probably worse. August Pullman was born with a facial deformity that up until now has prevented him from going to a mainstream school. Starting fifth grade at Beecher Prep, he wants nothing more than to be treated as an ordinary kid, but this new classmates can't get past Augie's extraordinary face. Wonder, now a New York Times bestseller, begins from Augie's point of view, but soon switches to include his classmates, his sister, her boyfriend, and others. These perspectives converge in a portrait of one of community's struggle with empathy, compassion, and acceptance. In a world where bullying among young people is an epidemic, this is a refreshing new narrative full of heart and hope. R.J. Palacio has called her debut novel a meditation on kindness. Indeed, every reader will come away with a greater appreciation for the simple courage of friendship. Augie is a hero to root for, a diamond in the rough who proves that you can't blend in when you were born to stand out. Join us on Friday, January 19th, 2018 in the Book Nook Room of http://www.accessibleworld.org. You know the rest. To discuss this great book, guest host Carla Hayes, email lingual@verizon.net. Hosted by Randy Shelton, email rshelton820@gmail.com. Co-host Ruth Ann Acosta, email ruth1244@gmail.com. 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and elsewhere in the world, Saturday, 1 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. We hope you'll join us to discuss this great book. D. Clayton, D-E-E Clayton number 1@gmail.com, writes, remember we are having a general meeting by phone on January 21st, 2018 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. The number to call is 712-432-3675. Follow the instructions to room 0. We have a lot to talk about. We will be talking about the new free Stabil Libre by Abbott Labs. everyone will also start discussing the BGAH conference convention in St. Louis in July. This is a good time for all of you to find out exactly what your affiliate is doing. You should have your renewal letter by now, and I hope everyone plans on joining us for another year. As president of ACB Diabetics in Action, I am hoping to see many of you on the call in January. I will be putting a notice out closer to the meeting day. So long for now, D. Clayton, president, ACB Diabetics in Action. Phone 515-848-5007. Email dclayton1@gmail.com. And Parsons writes, the next meeting of the Mystery Book Discussion Group will be held on the fourth Sunday of January, January 28th, 2018. Come join us. All are welcome. Happy New Year. We will be discussing A Bad Day for Sorry by Sophie Littlefield. You can find it on Bard by looking for DB72646. You can find it on Bookshare at https://www.bookshare.org/browse/book/171617. And Parsons Group Facilitator, email akp@portaltutoring.info. Skype at Pewter Tutor. Date Sunday, January 28th, 2018. Time 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern, and elsewhere in the world Sunday, 2200 Greenwich Mean Time. About 15 minutes before start time, go to http://conference321.com/masteradmin/room.asp query ID=RS7867A2369EOE. You know the rest. The National Federation for the Blind has partnered with E. La Carte Incorporated, creators of the Presto Smart Dining System, for full-service restaurants. The Applebee Restaurant franchise and Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired of San Francisco to produce a text-to-speech capability for the Presto Smart Dining System that will be incorporated into all current and future Presto System tablets, including those used in Applebee's restaurants. This partnership is a result of negotiations that began last year among E. La Carte, the Applebee's franchise, and the National Federation of the Blind, the Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired of San Francisco, and several blind Californians. The new functionality enables blind persons to interact with the Presto system, to independently order menu items, pay their bills, and perform other functions using a Presto system tablet. By performing certain gestures, blind patrons can turn on the text-to-speech capability of the tablets in order to access the new functionality. In addition, blind patrons can take advantage of the audio jack available on newer Presto Prime EMV tablets to activate the text-to-speech capability by simply plugging in a pair of headphones. The audio jack on Presto Prime tablets can be found and identified by a Braille tactile label located next to the jack. The National Federation of the Blind and Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired of San Francisco have been working with E. La Carte and the Applebee's franchise for several months to develop the new functionality, which has been tested by blind consumers. This continued testing and the related feedback will help E. La Carte to fine-tune the implementation such that it provides a user experience for blind consumers that is similar to that of other mobile and small screen device applications, and as a result is familiar to them. Like many new technologies, the E. La Carte system has the potential to provide the blind with greater independence than ever before, since we will now be able to access a restaurant menu choices in the same way that other customers do, said Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind. Therefore, we applaud E. La Carte in its efforts to provide to blind diners the same access to the Presto system that sighted persons enjoy, while also helping the restaurants who deploy the system comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act and other applicable laws. The new accessibility functionality will be included as a standard part of the Presto system and tablets and is available to all E. La Carte customers. Jose Feliciano. Baseball, music, and family are the passions that light his fire. Caption of a photo, Jose Feliciano performed recently at the Georgetown Saloon with his sons Jonathan and Michael under the stage name Two Kids and a Blind Guy. Mr. Feliciano was just given a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Hispanic Heritage Foundation, captioned, signed, Brian Heffala, the photographer. Music is the best healer of all wounds, according to Jose Feliciano, the legendary musician many critics have called the greatest living guitarist. Having endured physical limitations and a humble beginning, Mr. Feliciano, who lives in Weston with his family, has experienced the power of music through a highly successful career that has spanned nearly four decades. Earlier this month, he was honored as a role model in the Latino community by the Hispanic Heritage Foundation, which awarded him a Lifetime Achievement Award. Considered the first Latino crossover artist to achieve success, Mr. Feliciano is known worldwide for the songs Light My Fire and Feliz Navidad, and has six Grammy Awards and 45 gold and platinum records to his credit. At a black tie ceremony at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., the foundation recognized Mr. Feliciano along with Antonio Banderas, Juan Marichal, Juliette Villarreal Garcia, Consuelo Castillo Kickbush, and James A. Johnson. The ceremony was filmed live and was broadcast on NBC Universal stations on September 30th, as well as on the Telemundo network, Los Primos de Reyes Hispana, on October 1st, and the American Forces Network also on October 1st. Making the ceremony a real family affair, Mr. Feliciano performed Carlos Santana's signature piece, Oye Como Va, accompanied by his sons, Jonathan on drums and Michael on bass. Just a few weeks after the Kennedy Center honor, Mr. Feliciano was finishing production on a newly recorded album of duets. He could also be seen giving an impromptu mini-concert at the Emmanuel Episcopal Church Fair on Lions Plain Road and cheering for the Mets at Shea Stadium on the night they clinched the National League East title. The stadium rocked from the excitement, he said. At 61, Mr. Feliciano clearly shows no signs of slowing down. Love affair. One of 11 boys, Mr. Feliciano was born blind with congenital glaucoma in Puerto Rico in 1945. His love affair with music began at the age of 3 when he first accompanied his uncle on a tin cracker can. His family moved from Puerto Rico to New York City when he was 5, and soon thereafter he learned to play the guitar using only records as his teacher and practicing for as many as 14 hours per day. Exposed to rock and roll in the 50s, Mr. Feliciano was inspired to sing, and after his first professional engagement in Detroit, a music critic wrote, "If you want to witness the birth of a star, catch Mr. Feliciano before he leaves tomorrow night." In 1968, his version of The Doors' Light My Fire launched him to stardom, and his intelligence and amiable personality made him a fixture on television and talk shows. In 1996, Mr. Feliciano was elected to receive Billboard Magazine's Lifetime Achievement Award. New York City has also honored him by renaming Public School 155 in East Harlem the Jose Feliciano Performing Arts School. In 2001, he received a Doctor of Humane Letters degree from Sacred Heart University in Fairfield for his musical and humanitarian contributions to the world at home in Weston, Connecticut. For about 16 years, Mr. Feliciano and his wife Susan have called Weston home. They live in the former Banks Tavern, a historic building dating back to 1730. They share the homestead with their children, Melissa, 17, Jonathan, 15, Michael, 11, and a menagerie of pets, including exotic birds, such as parrots, finches, canaries, doves, and one quail. "We call him Dan," Mr. Feliciano said with a sly sense of humor. When he is not recording or performing on the road, Mr. Feliciano enjoys spending time at home with his family. "Connecticut is a beautiful state. Sometimes people are so involved in their businesses they don't stop to smell the roses, and there are a lot of roses here," he said. On any given Thursday at the Georgetown Saloon's open mic night, patrons may come across a musical act called Two Kids and a Blind Guy. That would be a trio consisting of Mr. Feliciano and his two sons. "So who gave the group its distinctive name?" "Guess who," Ms. Feliciano said. "Jose, of course. That's him," she laughed. Mr. Feliciano loves performing with his sons. "I never thought I would be playing with my boys. I am surprised how quickly they learned the songs I taught them." The boys, who are homeschooled, also study music at the Westport Music Center. For Jonathan, who plays drums and is learning guitar, performing at the Kennedy Center was a terrific experience, and he wasn't as nervous as he thought he would be. "As long as I'm playing with my dad, it's fun," he said. The Felicianos are an active part of the community, and every year they try to attend the Emmanuel Fair. In years past, Mr. Feliciano has judged the fair's chocolate chip cookie contest and been a prize in the silent auction, singing happy birthday to the winner. This year, Mr. Feliciano led the crowd in a stirring round of America the Beautiful, and afterwards introduced the pastor, David Fravor, to the culinary joys of the pig's cracklings at fair's long after-hours pig roast. Another caption to a photo, Jose Feliciano is greeted by Emmanuel Episcopal Church pastor David Fravor at the recent church fair, taken by Patricia Gay. National Anthem. It's hard to believe that such a generous and gentle man as Jose Feliciano, who is beloved by fans throughout the world, could ever have been the subject of a major national controversy. However, just as his career was taking off, he nearly got himself banned from the airwaves. It all started with the National Anthem. In 1968, Ernie Harwell, the announcer for the Detroit Tigers, asked me if I would like to sing the national anthem at the fifth game of the World Series, Mr. Feliciano said. Being a big baseball fan, he agreed. He had crafted a stylized version of the Star-Spangled Banner that was reverent and a bit bluesy, not unlike Ray Charles's version of America the Beautiful. Mr. Feliciano wanted to sing the anthem in gratitude to a country that had given him a chance and allowed a blind kid with a dream to reach far above his limitations, providing a better life for him and his family. I think this is a great country we live in, America, even with its faults, he said. But as soon as he started to sing before the packed stadium, he knew something was wrong. I could feel it, he said. At a time when the country was divided by the Vietnam War, some mistakenly believed that Mr. Feliciano's interpretation was unpatriotic, and there was immediately backlash. My career was put on hold, and some radio stations stopped playing my songs, he said. Although today stylized versions of the national anthem are commonplace, he was a pioneer and the first to do it, and for that he paid a price. Mr. Feliciano is still proud of the performance, and his recording of the national anthem can be heard on the website www.josefeliciano.com. In 1973, Mr. Feliciano worked his way back into the mainstream when he wrote and performed the theme song for the TV show Chico and the Man, starring newcomer and fellow Latino Freddie Prinze. He immediately struck up a friendship with Mr. Prinze, who at 22 was one of the hottest rising talents in Hollywood. Tragically, Mr. Prinze shot and killed himself while under the influence of drugs. This was a big loss, not only personally, but to the Hispanic community as well, because this was the first time a Latino was doing well in comedy and starring in a TV show, Mr. Feliciano said. The incident left a permanent mark on Mr. Feliciano, who is not afraid to speak out about the perils of drug abuse. If there's one message I can get across to parents, it is talk to your kids about drugs. When they are in school, search their rooms and look for paraphernalia. If you find drugs, confront them and do something about it, he said. As an avid fan of both the Mets and Yankees, Mr. Feliciano is looking forward to postseason play in Major League Baseball. He would love nothing more than a Subway Series between the two teams. I have followed the Mets for a long time and remember when they couldn't win a game, and I'm really glad for Willie Randolph and what he has done with the team. He has shown that an African-American can manage a baseball team and do a great job. Joe Torre probably taught him how to manage, he said. So who would he root for? I have to root for the underdogs, the Mets, he said. I was born sick, blind, and poor, and I can relate more to the underdogs of the world, he added. And how about the possibility of singing the national anthem for the Mets? I'd love it if they asked me to. I'll sing it for them. Perhaps this year his version of the national anthem would heal some wounds. From www.penmedicine.org, FDA approves gene therapy for inherited blindness developed by the University of Pennsylvania and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Decision marks the first gene therapy approved for a genetic disease in the U.S. Dateline, Philadelphia. In a historic move, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved a gene therapy initially developed by researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, CHOP, for the treatment of a rare inherited form of retinal blindness. The decision marks the nation's first gene therapy approved for the treatment of a genetic disease, and the first in which a new corrective gene is injected directly into a patient. written by Jean Bennett, M.D., Ph.D., and Albert M. McGuire, M.D. The therapy, known as Luxturna, voretigene neparvovec rizole, significantly improves eyesight in patients with confirmed biallelic RPE65 mutation associated with retinal dystrophy. Patients with RPE65 mutations suffer from severe visual impairment in infancy or early childhood, and by midlife become totally blind. They previously had no pharmacologic treatment or options. Spark Therapeutics, a Philadelphia biotechnology company created in 2013 by CHOP in an effort to accelerate the timeline for bringing new gene therapies to market, led the late-stage clinical development of Luxturna and built in West Philadelphia the first licensed manufacturing facility in the U.S. for a gene therapy treating an inherited disease. Spark was built on the foundational research conducted over a 10-year period by CHOP's Center for Cellular and Molecular Therapeutics, CCMT. Those efforts were led by Jean Bennett, M.D., Ph.D., the F.M. Kirby Professor of Ophthalmology at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, and Penn's CIE Eye Institute, and Catherine A. High, M.D., who directed the CCMT and now serves as Spark's president and head of research and development. Albert M. McGuire, M.D., a professor of ophthalmology at the Perelman School of Medicine and an attending physician at CHOP, served as the principal investigator of the clinical trials, which led to today's FDA approval. The approval is a culmination of more than 25 years of studies on congenital blindness by a married couple team, Bennett and Rick McGuire at Penn and CHOP, starting with pioneering work in mice and dogs. I've witnessed the dramatic changes in the vision of patients who would have otherwise lost their sight and feel exhilarated that this therapy will now make a difference in the lives of more children and adults, Bennett said. I'm hopeful that the path we've made with this research, with the help of our collaborators near and far, will be useful to other groups so that other gene therapies can be developed faster and help more people with other diseases. Today's news marks the second FDA approval for a University of Pennsylvania CHOP-developed therapy within 6 months. In August, the personalized cellular therapy known as Kymriah was approved for the treatment of advanced acute lymphoblastic leukemia in children and young adults. There are an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 patients in the United States with RPE65 mutations. The newly approved therapy will be available at select treatment centers across the nation. The one-time therapy corrects the deficits resulting from mutations in the gene RPE65, which is responsible for producing proteins that make light receptors work in the retina and vision possible. To restore production of those proteins, corrected versions of the RPE65 gene are delivered in a single injection using a genetically engineered benign adeno-associated virus to carry the genes to the retina. Within weeks, a patient's vision can begin to improve. The FDA recommends the use of the therapy for ages 12 months and older. Today's landmark approval is a great moment for science and the many individuals and families who live with genetic disease, High said. One of the hopes of the Human Genome Project had been that it would be possible to develop gene therapy to expand therapeutic options for people with genetic disease. Now that hope is a reality, we offer our sincere gratitude to the patients and their families, as well as the expert investigators who continue to participate in this and other clinical development programs. The Penn gene therapy work tightly links animal and human health, having begun in affected mice and dogs during the 1990s. In 2001, Bennett and McGuire had Penn colleagues Greg Ackland, Tomas Edelman, Samuel Jacobson, and Artur Sidisian reported they had successfully restored the sight of three blind dogs with a canine form of LCA, in collaboration with Cornell University's Gus Aguirre, now a professor of medical genetics and ophthalmology at the University of Penn School of Veterinary Medicine, and the University of Florida's Bill Howsworth. After the therapy, the dogs freely navigated through a dimly lit obstacle course, whereas before they would bump into objects. The first Penn-CHOP-led Phase 1 and 2 clinical studies began in late 2017 with a total of 12 patients ranging from 8 to 46 years old, most of whom experienced vision improvements within weeks of receiving the therapy. Half of the patients improved enough to no longer be classified as legally blind. Those initial clinical trials brought together patients and scientists from Penn and the Second University of Naples in Italy and Ghent University Hospital in Belgium. The first three patients to receive the therapy in 2007 are all now in their 20s and 30s and continuing to enjoy their improved vision. Results presented in 2015 from a pivotal Phase 3 trial of 29 patients aged 44 to 44, some of whom were treated at the University of Iowa, showed the therapy had significantly improved their ability to navigate an obstacle course designed to mimic daily activities in low light. The therapy dramatically restored most patients' ability to see, increased their sensitivity to light, and improved their side vision, the researchers reported. In the trials, the gene therapy safety profile was consistent with virectomy and subretinal injection procedures. Side effects included cataracts, changes in intraocular pressure, changes in macular structure, macular thinning, macular pucker, macular hole, intraocular infection in one patient, and a reduction in visual acuity in one patient. To date, a total of 41 patients have been treated with the therapy at CHOP and Iowa. Many of them are now reading the chalkboard, grocery shopping, taking driver license tests, having more job opportunities, and recognizing people's faces, among other activities that had seemed impossible before. It has been amazing watching them grow up, Bennett said. It's like they are an extended part of our family. Bennett and McGuire have also adopted two dogs, Mercury and Venus, that were part of early trials of the new approach. And the approval of the gene therapy approach for LCA opens up the door to developing therapies that target other mutations behind hereditary blindness and retinal diseases, and emphasizes the importance of genetic testing so that people living with inherited diseases can potentially benefit from gene treatments as they emerge, McGuire said. It also serves as a stepping stone to more prevalent diseases. A gene therapy clinical trial that delivers a corrected gene in patients with wet macular degeneration, for instance, is already underway at centers, including the Shia Eye Institute. Today, patients with this disorder must receive injections of a much-needed protein once a month. Using gene therapy could bring that down to just a single injection. Similar types of therapy may also help treat other diseases, such as hearing-related problems and muscular dystrophy, for example. Lyft is making the app more accessible for visually impaired riders. Here's why it's important. Finding reliable transportation is one of the biggest challenges facing people with visual impairment, and though some cities make navigation easier for the blind and visually impaired, ride-sharing has been an independence-boosting game-changer for folks who are blind or visually impaired. Considering Lyft is available to 95% of Americans, and AERA serves 300 million blind and visually impaired folks around the world, according to a press release from AERA, the partnership is set to help millions of people access rides they can count on. Sumang Kanuganti, AERA founder and CEO, said in a press release that Lyft is committed to be a model for the type of community we want our world to be, diverse, inclusive, and safe. AERA's mission is to give people who are blind or low vision the power of information. I'm psyched about this partnership as it's designed to provide an end-to-end enhanced experience that makes traveling more accessible to the blind and low vision community anytime and anywhere. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.